quite
unusual.
Well, hey, you chuts, look what just blew in. It's the Quite Unusual podcast, and we're your hosts. We're a couple of real bear cats sipping on the old bubble water. I'm Noelle.
And I'm Nicole.
Well, shit, ain't that hotsy-totsy. Just a pair of flappers, Oliver Twisting for a couple of clams with the help of some panther piss, you see?
Did you just say panther piss?
I sure did say panther piss.
All right, I don't know what you're doing here, but I sort of like it.
Well, I listened to a lot of videos about 1920 slang, and I decided that's how I'm going to talk from now on.
That's how you're going to write an intro?
Yeah, that's okay. How I'm speaking from now on, actually.
Oh, okay, this is how you're going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, the reason I'm talking like a hep cat daddy-o on Swing Street is because we are traveling back to the 1920s for today's episode to talk about Radium Girls. Mm. This topic was suggested to us by one of our listeners, Chaz Boudoir, and their parakeet, Charlie.
Charlie. I am actually so glad that Chaz and Charlie mentioned this topic because it's one of my favorites, and it's actually been on my list for a while now, and I remember coming across a story, I don't even know how long ago, but I remember just reading it and being like, someone needs to make a freaking movie about this. And years later, someone actually did make a movie about this, and it's on Netflix for your viewing pleasure.
Yes, and it's a really good movie. Mm. Like, really good. It's fun, it's touching, it's tragic. It's really hopeful also in a weird way.
Yeah.
And it also stars Joey King, who is adorable. How cute is she?
She is such a gem. I really do. I like Joey King, but I honestly wasn't that big of a fan of the movie.
Oh, I thought it was fun.
It was good. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
But I think they could have done a lot more with it. And I think they should have actually used the names of the real girls.
I agree. I do.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I would have liked it better if it were more historically accurate and actually told about the real girls, but I mean, I wasn't mad that I watched it, so there's that, I guess.
I definitely agree with you. I think mm-hmm. that they tried to maybe combine a few of, like, the actual girls into one character.
Yeah.
Here yeah. and there, and it just sort of got, like, brushed over.
Right.
Like, the true story.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's a good entry for people that don't know anything or, mm-hmm. you know, don't know anything about the topic or are just looking yeah. to get, like, some basic information.
Right. I think everyone, if after this episode, if you want to do more research or learn more about this specific topic, definitely watch the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Not going to shit on it for that, but I think you should watch the movie.
Yes, but also, if you're interested, it is a very good book.
I can't wait to read, like, the book.
Like, one of the most informational and tragic and just moving books that I have ever read.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, well, I didn't read it. I listened to it. I listened to the audiobook, which is free on Hoopla. And at this point, Hoopla, where you at? Sponsor us, because it's every episode now.
Honestly, seriously, yeah.
Right? The narrator has the cadence of Moira Rose.
What?
It's amazing.
Ugh.
She's good. It's sometimes it's sort of like, why did you put emphasis on that word? It's very, very Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek.
I love
so
it, though.
It's very fun. The book is incredible. So anyways, check that out if you want additional details. It is yeah. full of it. It's if you need to fill 15 hours of your time with something, listen to Moira Rose talk about the Radium Girls.
See, the issue for me with listening, because I used to listen to audiobooks all of the time.
Yeah.
But I was also driving to work like 45 minutes in traffic there and back per day. So that's why I had extra time to listen to audiobooks. Now, with my extra time, I don't know. I do other things.
Stare into the abyss.
I stare at walls. That's yeah, what I do.
Same, dude.
That's what I do with my extra time.
But I also drive to the bar in 45 minutes, so
yeah.
I'm getting my audiobook in.
You know what? I should, when I drive to your house, I should listen.
Oh, yeah. Instead of listening to that one Dance Dance Revolution song you love so much on repeat, it's really weird.
I know. It's too good.
Yeah, you're just thinking about the movements the whole time. It's just like, okay, I get it. You're like the champion of like the local DDR at the arcade that is now defunct because of COVID. But girl, let it go. Okay, you were once an Irish princess, and now you are just Irish.
I know. It's a really bad thing because on the highway, I'm just like constantly braking and speeding up out of nowhere, and it's all attributed to Dance Dance Revolution and that one song.
Yeah, your insurance rates must be through the fucking roof.
Yeah, I've had to replace my brake pedals all of the time.
the way she goes through brake pedals, it's just...
Can you tell I don't know anything about brake pedals or cars? Because I don't.
But you know so much about Dance Dance Revolution.
The most. The most about that,
the most anyone's ever known.
I guess we just have, since we've derailed this so far, I will commit to listening to the story, because this story is actually, it's a very sad one, and it's a very important story, and I hope you guys get as much out of it as we did researching it.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess without further ado, let's talk about the Radium Girls.
Yes, it's going to be sad. It's going to be gross.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So forewarning on that one.
Buckle up, buttercups.
But we will try to make it fun still.
Yeah.
Gotta keep it light, you know? Like keep it fresh light. Shake your shoulders.
Fun, you know?
Yeah. Just like keep it light, girl.
Okay. Keep your neck loose.
That's right. Unclench your jaw. Just like those Instagram posts tell you to.
Roll those shoulders back.
Yeah.
And get
listen,
ready.
Listen
get ready
to
and listen.
Some stories about pus. Because we're going to get there. We're going to.
We're going to.
Soon. So if you're squeamish, maybe skip this one. For those that are not quite sure what radium is, it is an element. It's silvery white in color, and it's highly radioactive. The name radium comes from the Latin radius, meaning ray, because radium shone brightly. Rays illuminate the darkness. Radium was first discovered by Madame Marie Curie and her husband Pierre on December 21st, 1898. It was isolated from uraninite, which used to be known as pitchblende. Pitchblende is a black tar-like material created as a byproduct of silver mining. It is very rich in uranium. The deposits of uraninite the Curies were studying came from the Ore Mountains along the German and Czech border. The silver mine there has been operational since the 1400s, which seems freaking nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and uraninite was plentiful since the mine's opening.
1400s?
I know.
It's insane.
Yeah, they were looking for silver in the mountains.
Wow.
The Curies pulled the uranium out of the uraninite and were surprised to find that what was left over was not only still radioactive, but it was drastically more radioactive than pure uranium. The radiation emitted from radium is 3 million times greater than the radiation emitted from uranium.
Wow.
Which is fucking insane.
So they take radium from uranium?
Yes.
But it's like more radium is more radioactive than uranium.
Yeah, I know. It's like all the same letters. Yes.
It all ends in EM.
Yeah. Radium is more radioactive than uranium.
Wow.
But they both are coming out of this uranite.
Okay.
Which is like a compound that consists of both of these elements.
Gotcha.
Radium has a half-life of about 1,600 years. I read somewhere that it's 1,666 years, which I like because I was the Satan. But
the number of the beast.
Yeah, it's kind of all over. So we're just going to go with 1600, which means that it is radioactive for that amount of time. And then it will begin to break down and become half as radioactive, eventually decaying until it is no longer radioactive.
That is such a long time.
It's extremely long. In July of 1898, Marie Curie isolated out of this pitch blend polonium, which sounds delicious, sounds like bologna, barium, uranium, and radium. Radium had yet to be discovered, And Marie was like, Sacre bleu. Actually, she's Polish. Did you know that? She's not French.
Well, she's a, isn't she like a Polish person who grew up in France?
Yeah.
So she is French.
But would she have a Polish, does she have a Polish accent? I don't know.
Not if she grew up in France.
True.
She would have a French accent.
Okay, well then she said, Sacre bleu, this is glowing in le dark. We should call it radium, is what she said.
Exactly like that.
Yeah. She said the name, she wanted to name it something that sounded super deadly, but not like so deadly that people won't ingest it willingly.
Well, you know? I mean, yeah, it sounds like something out of a Marvel movie. So, I mean, it can't be that bad.
Nothing bad happens in Marvel movies. No. So I agree with that.
They always solve it. So it's fine.
Oh, it's exactly like all the crime novels we like where everything is solved, just like in the Marvel universe. Mm. The unit for radioactivity is called a Curie, which is very cute.
Yeah.
After Marie Curie, what an honor. Nobody even cared about her husband, Pierre.
Well, I mean, he just was irrelevant. It was all about Marie.
Yeah, so I think that's very nice. It's based on the radioactivity of radium-226, which is an isotope of radium. In September of 1910, Marie Curie, along with fellow scientists André-Louis de Bernier, announced that they had isolated radium as a pure metal, a groundbreaking achievement. This meant that radium metal could now be produced on an industrial level. And they high-fived and they popped a bottle of champagne and were like, fuck yeah, we about to make it rich. Almost immediately, radium became known as a modern medical Marvel movie. Just kidding. One of the founding physicians of Johns Hopkins Hospital, Howard Atwood Kelly, was a major proponent of radium as a cancer treatment. And fun story, I used to smoke weed with Johnny Hopkins every day. It was me and Sloane Kettering.
He was blazing that shit up every day?
Yeah. So just a fun, you know, little thing that you guys need to know.
Sloane Kettering. It's my favorite part. Well, actually, one of my favorite parts of that movie. There's so many.
He tested the method on his own aunt in 1904. He would cut open the cancerous area or like the tumor directly and insert a radium capsule and then sew it in place.
What?
Yep. He was known to be extremely excessive in his use of radium and just put in way more than he needed.
Okay.
And several of his first patients died, including his aunt, shortly after surgery.
Okay. 1904. This is the time he was doing this? Yeah. Or around the time?
1904.
That must have been a wild time for doctors, man. I mean, I feel like no one knew anything.
No.
And you could basically just declare yourself a doctor, and then you were one.
Yeah.
And all the shit that they experimented with, I mean, they just gave everyone morphine to treat everything. Like, do you have a headache? Have some morphine. Did you just break your leg?
Yeah.
Here's some morphine.
Thank you.
I mean, what a time to be alive.
They were the Oprahs of the morphine world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, like, all surgeons were, like, barbers at this time also.
Yeah.
So basically, they just figured if you could wield a blade of any kind, you could be a surgeon / doctor. You were good. Like, anything you wanted, you could pretty much do.
If you could wield a blade, you can wield a scalpel.
That's the motto of the Johns Hopkins Hospital, actually.
1904.
Mm-hmm.
It was written in stone.
So nice. It's carved in the side of the building.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to smoke weed under it every day.
With Sloane Kettering?
Yep. Have you heard of Henrietta Lacks?
I don't think so.
She was a woman who was suffering from cervical cancer, and they took some of her cancer cells to form the HeLa cells, if that sounds familiar.
Mm, yeah, it does, actually.
Yeah, this is used in basically testing all new pharmaceuticals and all new treatments. They used this method on her where they cut open her cervical tumor and they put in a piece of radium and then sewed it back up.
Oh.
Yeah, she died.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to guess most people did when you put radioactive material inside their bodies.
Yeah.
Ooh, foreshadowing?
Oh.
Sorry. Mm. Her story is incredibly sad, and it's also very, very interesting and also very, very fucked up. Mm. So highly recommend looking into her if you're interested in learning about injustice, which there's plenty of that, and also medical miracles.
Oh, okay. There,
yeah, there's a book. It's really, really good. It's called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, and I'm pretty sure that they made a movie about it.
Yeah. I think, actually, I've definitely heard of this movie, and I've... When you first mentioned Henrietta Lacks, I was like, no, I haven't heard about her.
Yeah.
But when you mentioned The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, mm-hmm. I've definitely heard of that, and I've never seen it, but now that you mention it, it's a movie that I would like to check out.
Yeah, it's super, super good. So highly recommend if you like weird medical shit.
I do.
But anyways, let's get back to radium.
Yes.
In Canada, around 1910, radium was used to produce radon gas, which was inhaled by those suffering from cancer as a treatment. And to the astonishment of everyone, it worked like really, really well. The radium sliced through the cancer like a hot knife through butter. Should I read that like a 1920s person?
Please do.
The radium sliced through cancer like a hot knife through butter, you see? Sending many sufferers into remission if it didn't kill them first. Radium was becoming a true wonder drug. Also, in 1904, a biologist by the name of Daniel MacDougall used radium in an attempt. I'm sorry, how would you say it?
Exactly like that.
Then do it.
Daniel MacDougall?
Feels good, doesn't it?
It rolls off the tongue.
I know it does. He used radium in an attempt to disrupt normal growth in fruit flies and induce mutations to speed up evolution. And guess what happened?
What happened?
It worked, baby.
Woo!
That's showbiz, mutated fruit flies. Radium was considered a wonder drug with no ends. And it could really just help anything that bothered a person, just like morphine. You got a problem? Morphine. You don't want morphine? Here's some radium.
Take some radium instead. Yeah.
Do you know what? Take both. Here you go, sweetheart. Even up through the 1970s in the United States, nasal radium irradiation was a medical procedure given to children with large tonsils, promising to shrink them in size.
Ooh, okay. Ouch.
I don't really understand what the point of this would be.
People get their tonsils removed. Maybe it was, like, irritating or they were just getting strep throat a lot. I don't know.
Maybe. So they're like, here, breathe in this radiation.
Take some radium. It'll fix everything that is ever wrong with you.
We're out of morphine, but we have radium. Just 2 years after the discovery of radium, the first case of radium dermatitis cropped up. A French physicist named Antoine Becquerel had been carrying a small glass jar of radium in his pocket of his waistcoat, and he had forgotten about it being in there while he was going on trips, like to and from England. It was just chilling in there. After about 6 hours, though, he had noticed that there was a burn on his skin and ulceration began. At first, he couldn't figure out what it was from, and then he realized that it had been the radium whose rays emitted through the glass directly into his skin, burning him. Pierre Curie, of Marie Curie marriage fame, had submerged his own arm into a tub of radium for 10 hours for some fucking reason.
What?
Yep, to see the effects, which, as you can imagine, were not great.
I'm sorry, he dipped his whole arm in just see what it would be like?
Mm-hmm. Up to the elbow.
He didn't just maybe decide to do, like, the tip of his pinky finger or, like, something smaller before, I don't know, going balls deep into a radium tub?
He only dipped his balls in for 3 hours.
Okay.
Yeah. Arm 10, balls 3.
Okay. Yeah. Well, to each his own, I guess.
Pretty casual. Can you imagine your husband just being like, I'm going to be late for dinner. My arm is in radiation right now.
My balls also, but... It's fine.
They only have like 15 minutes left, so we're good. His skin became ulcerated, just like Antoine's, and he suffered deep burns that never really healed, you know, because he put his arm in radiation for 10 hours.
And his balls.
Yeah, there was only 3, though, so like...
Those were good?
Yeah, those were totally fine. Hairless for the rest of his life.
Well, wow, congratulations.
The money he saved on waxing... It was worth it.
He was going to get those laser, but he was like, radium instead.
Yeah. Why use a laser when you can use the glow of radium?
It's the answer to everything.
Huff a little morphine and everything seems like a good idea. these were just two instances, and the world had already become fascinated by radium, so it kind of ignored it. It glowed bright like the sun, and it gave hope to those looking for a cure for everything. I mean, how could something so beautiful be bad for you?
Yeah, I mean, that never is.
No. Everything beautiful is always perfect and pristine and never mean or anything.
Everyone knows that.
Well, this was very, very, very bad for you. The world would eventually come to find, while radium decays, it emits an electric current, which we know as radiation. When that electric current is extremely strong, it can be seen with the naked eye, and it appears as a cool green glow.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so things can be irradiated, but not glow, which means that it's sort of weak.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see something glowing in the dark, I mean, now we have, like, you know, science, like other science and shit, and we just whatever, it's probably not radiation, but truly I do not know what makes glow sticks glow.
You're telling me that those stars that I put up on my ceiling as a child,
pure radium.
Wow, that explains a lot about me, actually. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
okay,
it does.
Cool.
Yeah, I know you ate a couple.
Oh yeah,
but you'll probably be fine.
Oh, we could.
Yeah, did you put your balls in any?
I layered my balls.
My favorite thing is that when you laugh, your chair squeaks.
I know.
So good. It's like, hur, hur, hur.
I wonder if it's going to pick it up on the mic. If it does, I'll leave it in.
I hope it does.
When did it start doing that?
I don't know. I'll tighten her up, unless you like it.
I kind of like it.
Once it was obvious that radium was the key to long life and scientifically induced mutations, capitalism did what it does best, and hundreds of radium-laced products hit the market. Some claim to have radium, but didn't, which, I mean, I guess we'll find out is great.
Probably for the best.
But a lot of them were just chocked full of radium. Anything you could think of, there was a brand that included radium in that product. Milk, full of radium.
What?
Butter, full of radium. Soap, you better believe it, radium. Makeup, what do you think?
Radium?
Definitely radium. You name it, it could be made with radium. And it was.
Wow.
There's so many, but I want to tell you about my favorites.
Please
I spent way too long looking at old-timey ads about radium. It was very sad. So there was a table salt that was made with radium.
What?
The brand was Radithor. It was invented by William J.A. Bailey, which sounds like an absolute salesman's name.
Yeah.
And it claimed to have curative properties. William J.A. Bailey later died of stomach cancer.
From the salts that he created?
Unsubstantiated claims, Nicole.
Okay.
Dorman radioactive toothpaste was laced with radium, guaranteed to make your teeth shine brighter and whiter. Sold alongside Thoradia toothpaste, which contained not only radium, but also thorium, another extremely radioactive element.
And another extremely Marvel-sounding name.
All of these.
Yeah.
The inventor of Thoradia did not stop at toothpaste. He also had a line of cosmetics that promised to rejuvenate and brighten the skin.
What?
You know, put a little glow in those cheeks. That was their motto for the overnight cream.
All right, speaking for the two of us here, because I would say we're both skincare junkies, right?
Hardcore.
You more so than me, but I learn from you. So if we were alive during this time, we would probably 1,000% buy the shit out of this and put it on our faces every night.
You know, when I was looking at these ads, I had that thought over and over and over.
Right?
I would buy all of this shit.
Uh-huh.
Brighter teeth, sign me up.
Mm-hmm.
Clearer skin, sign me up.
Get rid of wrinkles? Hell yeah.
I would, the things I would put on my face to get rid of wrinkles, Nicole.
The things I have put on my face to get rid of wrinkles.
And will continue to.
Right. What if in like 5 years they come out with a study and they say that retinol gives you cancer? We're so screwed.
Dude. We're so screwed.
We're so screwed.
We will be known as the retinol girls.
Mm.
Yes.
Let's hope that never happens.
Yeah, no shit, dude. I know. I was thinking about this, too.
About all the shit that they tell us that's okay, and we don't know. There's just blindly listen.
There's so much, and there's, like, acceptable levels of things, and...
Scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking a lot about this while we were doing our research, and everyone just wants to make a profit, and no one wants you to actually be healthy.
Yeah.
So every time you buy... This is just my little personal PSA here, unrelated to the show. Every time you buy something that's quote unquote healthy or something, maybe just use like your independent thought and think, okay, so should I be eating all of these slugs from the Amazon? Should I be? Are they healthy? Sure, they're full of protein, but the Amazon rainforest is dying. Do I want to?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you don't want to be known like in 45 years as like the slug girl. Who, like, got some sort of weird Amazonian slug cancer.
Right. I don't know why eating slugs was the topic brought to hand in this situation.
But it's just the only thing I can think of.
No one wants to be known as the slug girl.
I don't.
No one does.
That would be embarrassing.
Yeah.
Do you want to be known as the girl that uses the rejuvenator pot?
Depending on what that is.
Well, it's a white ceramic pot painted with the inside... with radium-laced paint.
Revigorator pot.
Revigorator, thank you. Do you want to be known as the Revigorator pot girl?
Well, I guess depending on what that actually is, I don't know.
The Revigorator pot was a white ceramic pot painted on the inside with a radium-laced paint. You would fill the pot with water, and then the next day it would be fit to drink. You know, like once it had soaked up all that goodness of radiation and really got it in there. The instructions for use were to, quote, fill jar every night, drink freely when thirsty, and upon arising and retiring, average 8 or more glasses daily.
What?
Yeah, you're supposed to drink a minimum of 8 glasses of radium water.
A day.
Yeah, every day. Wow. Upon rising and retiring.
Wow.
It claimed to prevent arthritis, cure flatulence, and prevent salinity. And I looked this up, and you can find them on eBay.
They still have them?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of these products, like, out there.
Yeah. Wow.
I have a question for you. Do you have trouble getting a boner?
Every day of my life.
Try radium.
What?
Yeah. A piece of wax laced with radium would be formed into a tiny little rod and, you guessed it, inserted into the urethra to cure your softie.
Okay, I don't even have a dick, but I'm cringing so hard just thinking about this. I can't even imagine how our male listeners might be feeling right now. So well, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I don't. Is it still not working? Try wearing radium-infused underwear. Ooh. Or better yet, take the radio endocrinator for a spin. This was a little booklet of cards painted with pure radium, which was placed next to a limp dick overnight, and bam, not only will your erections return, but they will be irradiated and maybe glow in the dark.
Wait, so you just place these cards next to your... penis, like in your underwear,
like in, not in it, like in your underwear, like under your dick, on top of your dick, on the sides of your
surrounding
dick,
surrounding your dick.
Oh yeah, you want to make like a little house of cards and just like insert your, like,
for your penis to live in,
your unworking penis into it.
Oh, okay.
And then the curative properties of radium will fix it.
Okay.
I don't know, man. Of course, you could always drink pre-bottled radium-infused water if you needed a little pep in your step, but you didn't want to put in the work. Doctors called it liquid sunshine.
Of course they did.
Yeah, and they prescribed it as a tonic to cure anything that could be bothering a person. But why stop there, Nicole? Why not take a trip to a radium spa?
No.
Yep. Soak in tubs full of radium water, sit in natural hot springs infused with radium, or... lay in radioactive sand.
Wow.
Full of uranium ore, a byproduct of radium production. This promised to be highly radioactive. They promised you it would be highly radioactive.
But they also told you it was going to cure you of everything, right?
Oh, yeah. It was going to completely cure absolutely everything. These soaking tubs in these sandboxes claimed to cure arthritis, rheumatism, if you were sad. pep you up. If maybe, like, you made a pot roast and your mother-in-law didn't like it, next time you saw her, you could just, like, glow in the dark a little bit and intimidate her. I don't know. It really was, like, it would cure anything.
Wow.
Yeah. And what's super, super fun is that I found an article with 10 currently open radium spas. Well, I mean, open as of 2019.
What?
So, yeah. So I don't know if they're still open because of COVID. But you can take...
Because of COVID, they're not open, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, I am. You can take a bath in radioactive water. And they're still claiming that it's being beneficial to your health.
Where are these spas?
They are not... I think there's one in Tennessee. I think the biggest... Out. Yeah, the biggest one, I think, is in Japan. There's, like, one in the Ukraine. They just opened one at Chernobyl.
they didn't.
No, I made that last one up. But there's, like, literally 10 of them. I think there's one in Greece or something. I don't know. It was a BuzzFeed article. And you could go and sit in radioactive water. And they're like, no, it's really good for you.
Despite all of the scientific evidence that we've known for years and years.
Yeah.
Why one guy said.
Why listen to science when you could have your own opinion?
Well, I mean, that's the motto of 50% of Americans, so makes sense.
Pretty much. So, sweet listeners, before you book a trip to a radium spa, listen to the rest of this and then maybe reconsider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Radium was formulated into a paint as well. In 1904, William J. Hammer invented a radium paint called Undark, which is such a cool name.
Yeah.
Undark is a bright greenish white in the day, but in the dark, it's illuminated and it's like a brilliant neon color. Undark was the trademarked name the U.S. Radium Corporation gave to their luminous paint. Other companies quickly caught on and created their own versions. Luna was the name given to the paint by the Radium Dial Company, a division of Standard Chemical Company, which I would always, always trust a Standard Chemical Company.
Oh, for sure.
And the cold light manufacturing company called it Marvelite.
See? Total Marvel universe here. Also, can't you just see some guy getting, I guess, exposed to radium, and then he gets all these powers, and he becomes known as Undark?
Oh,
that's his superhero name.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be something so cool. I mean, Undark is a very cool name.
That would totally be a superhero name.
I think it would be like Mr. Marvelite or something lame if it was from like the 1920s.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, Undark would be like his new name.
Yeah, I think, well, I think the comics came out a little bit later, so I that's guess true. That's why, but
yeah,
total Marvel this whole episode.
All day. The glowing paint contained only about 1 microgram of radium. A mixture of water, adhesive, and radium, and also sometimes zinc sulfide powder, came together to create Undark. It was used to paint aircraft switches, instrument dials, and nuclear panels. And of course, there were the famous radium dial clocks with their eerily glowing numbers and hands.
In 1916, a company called U.S. Radium Corporation opened in Orange, New Jersey, hiring about 70 women to paint radium on watch faces to give it its luminous glow. At the time, the U.S. was heavily involved in World War I, and the need for watches was very great. With all the men busy fighting the war, women had to step up to the plate and take on jobs to keep the country going and basically just to provide supplies to the boys overseas.
Oh yeah, it was like a real Rosie the Riveter moment.
This was a task that many women were happy to take on, and they took it on with pride. Many women had brothers, husbands, fathers, and friends fighting for their freedom, and they wanted to do everything they could to help win the war. There was now a high demand for weapons and munitions, and women flocked to factories for jobs that were traditionally held by men. To put quite simply, the government needed the women and even promoted the employment of women in factories. A lot of women worked on assembly lines and took on very hard labor jobs. So when the U.S. Radium Corporation opened a watch factory where the job was to simply sit at a table and paint, this position was highly coveted.
Can you imagine? Like, your options are working in a terrible, dirty, dusty factory where you have to labor all day long. Or
constant back pain.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Or you can sit in a well-lit room with a bunch of other girls, technically be considered an artist, mm-hmm. and paint watch tiles all day.
Yeah, I know which job I would choose.
I would have absolutely chose this job.
Dial painting was considered an elite job for the poor working girls. It was considered very glamorous in comparison to the other factory jobs, and it even paid more than 3 times the average factory job. Which back in the day, especially for women, was a huge thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Independence, anything.
It was estimated that 4,000 workers were hired by the USRC in the US and Canada to paint watch faces. The rate of pay for painting one watch face was a penny and a half, which in today's money would equal about 30 cents. This doesn't sound like a lot of money, but the average worker could paint around 250 dials a day, which would equal $75 per day in today's money, $375 per week if you worked Monday through Friday, and about $2,325 a month. And this was for a woman in 1916, which was a lot of money. And to top it all off, the girls were listed and considered artists.
Yeah.
So that title was just better than just being a factory worker.
Absolutely. And also in the book that I did read, they said that the women didn't even just work Monday through Friday. Some would take watch faces home and do it after work hours.
Really?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them would work at least 6 days a week, so they're getting extra money.
Overtime.
Yeah, dude. And also, I was looking up conversion rates, and it seems a little bit skewed to me because, like, $2,300 a month is a decent wage now, right? Mm-hmm. But the buying power that $2,300 had in 1916,
right?
That's like what a house cost.
Yeah, and I think we also don't factor in the fact that, I mean, women were paid exponentially less than men. Even today,
men are Nicole, that's a lie.
Women are still underpaid compared to men, and back then it was just even worse. So these women making this much money was a huge thing.
Yeah.
Major.
Unprecedented. And they were artists. So mm-hmm. it's like two amazing things happening at once.
Right. Having a job painting dials gave select women the financial freedom, and some girls even made more money than their fathers.
Take that, father.
Having a job painting dials put these women in the top 5% of female workers nationally. Only women were chosen for this job because it was thought that their small, feminine hands were perfect for the task.
Well, I have bad news for both of us.
I have gigantic man hands.
Same, dude. So we'd just be fumbling around with it. We could never be dialed.
Well, you know what? In this situation, our man hands would save our freaking lives. Many of the women were young. They were teenagers. And a lot of the times, the girls would get their friends and their families in on it, too, because it was such a good job and a fantastic place to work.
Oh, my God. You got to hook it up.
Exactly. The girls were told that radium was completely safe. It was the wonder element, after all, and they were told that it would put roses in their cheeks.
Ooh, actual roses inside of my cheeks?
Yeah.
That sounds terrible. I'm allergic to pollen.
Mr. Savoy, who was the manager at the plant, told the girls that it wasn't dangerous and they had nothing to be afraid of. However, the owners of the company and the scientists who worked with radium were very careful to avoid any and all exposure. The men who worked with radium used lead screens and lead aprons and masks and even used ivory-tipped tongs while handling this element.
And I can't wait to find out what the girls use.
Scientists knew the dangers of radium.
After they submerged their arm fully into it for a minimum of 10 hours.
Even their balls once.
Yeah, it was only 3 hours though, so it's fine.
In fact, many people had already died of radium poisoning before the first woman had even painted a dial. But the company told everyone that it would add years to your lives and that it was completely okay. But this statement was based on research that was conducted and paid for by the radium firms.
What? Companies would never do something like that.
So weird. The girls were taught the lip dip or lip pointing technique. This technique required the girls to put the paintbrush in their mouths and slide the paintbrush between their lips to get the perfect point for the precision needed to paint the tiny dials, some of which were only 3.5 centimeters wide.
But they still wore the lead aprons and used tongs, right?
They absolutely did not.
What?
Lip dip paint was the routine that every girl followed over and over again. In doing so, the girls inadvertently would swallow a great deal of radium, which garnered them the nickname the Ghost Girls, because after their shifts, the girls would actually glow in the dark.
Yeah, dude. Full of healthy, healthy radiation.
The girls actually thought that this was super cool because they didn't think that there was anything wrong with this, because that's what they were told. They were responsible for mixing their own radium paint, and when they did so, the radioactive dust would swirl around them in the air, and it would coat their skin, their hair, and their clothes, which prompted the girls to wear their best dresses to work so they could go out and shine on the dance floors when they went out afterwards, and possibly also to attract suitors.
Hell, dude. Okay, totally. You're at, like, this dance hall, right? There's all these swinging hotties out there. You're just a hepcat trying to get a girl. Who cares? And you see a girl actually glowing from the other side of the room.
Gonna attract your attention.
Like a moth to a motherfucking flame. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How fucking cool would this be?
Awesome. This, I would do it.
Dude, this scares me so much because I would 100% be one of these girls.
Yeah.
How fucking cool would that be? You live in a place called Orange, New Jersey, which I don't know much about Orange, New Jersey, but I know oranges don't grow there, and it's also in New Jersey. So, not great. Orange is the Jersey Shore of New Jersey.
I thought Jersey Shore was the Jersey Shore of New Jersey.
That's just what I heard, okay? I'm just repeating what I heard.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. So, these girls have this incredible job where they're making bank. They're buying hot-ass dresses. They're buying furs. They're buying, like, the latest fucking fashions. All this cool shit. And they get to glow in the dark.
They're attracting all of the hotties in Orange, New Jersey.
The Jersey Shore of New Jersey.
Some girls even painted their teeth and painted their faces with radium as, I guess, a cool party trick to impress guys with.
Sounds cool to me.
Yeah. In the movie, actually, Joey King paints her nails with radium, and I'm sure so many women did the same thing.
Yeah, in the book, they say that the U.S. Radium Company was super, super stingy with their paint. Mm-hmm. So you only got a certain amount per day, which meant that some women had to share if they had any left over so they could kind of get as many dials painted as they could.
Yeah.
But other factories gave an allotment in the morning and then also an allotment for the evening. So there was tons left over. The floor supervisors were like, here, dude, take this whole vial of paint home, or like do whatever you want with it. We truly do not care. Mm-hmm. And then the girls did. So like you said, they would paint their faces, paint their bodies, paint their nails, but also a lot of them would paint walls in their homes. Mm-hmm. They'd paint their jewelry boxes. They'd paint their jewelry, their shoes, gifts, like anything and everything. I mean, how cool would that be?
Yeah.
So this shit was all around them all the time.
Yeah. And to the point of them getting the allotment of the radium for the day or whatever, if they knew that they were going out to the dance hall that night, they could have saved that specific amount because they wanted to, I don't know, paint their face with it or paint their nails with it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would do that.
I would too. 100%. Also, one more thing about dance halls that you keep bringing up.
Yeah.
In the book, they named the Aragon Ballroom as one of the best, hottest dance clubs in town.
In Chicago?
It was an actual ballroom.
It still is. It's at, well, I mean, I don't know if it's still
Aragon Ballroom.
I've been there.
It's like for concerts, though, now. Yeah, like a venue.
It's very beautiful, though.
It's super beautiful.
I'm thinking the ceiling is like all painted really intricately and stuff.
Yeah, there's radium paint up there.
Is it?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. But I just thought it was funny that something that, you know, you go see Pearl Jam at now used to probably be full of radium girls.
Wow.
Swiveling their hips Oliver Twist style.
That is very interesting. All around, the Ghost Girls were living their best lives. They had high-paying jobs, financial freedom, and they glowed in the dark. That is until everyone started to get very sick.
It's a real downer. As we spoke about earlier, radium was considered a miracle product, but in actuality, it was an extremely radioactive element that was used to slather the populace in, quote, sunshine, or indirectly ingested by the recommendation of doctors. It only worked as a cure for cancer because it indiscriminately killed cells, not just the cancer, but also the healthy cells around the cancer. And remember, these dial painting girls are doing the classic dip into paint, lip point, and then paint, I don't know what, 1 to 12 times. They were doing this per dial, hundreds of times a day.
Over and over again, yeah.
That's a lot of radium in your body. When ingested, 80% of radium luckily leaves the body when you poop, but the other 20% goes directly into your bloodstream where it accumulates into your bones.
Does that mean that their shit glowed in the dark?
Probably, honestly.
Wow. Okay.
That's some hot shit right there. Radium gives off three types of radiation: alpha, gamma, and beta rays. Just by wearing thick clothing, gamma and beta rays are blocked. Alpha rays are pretty weak. They won't even pass through healthy skin by themselves. Except when it's ingested, then alpha rays wreak havoc on a body from the inside out. At the time of the Manhattan Project, which I'm sure you know, but it's when the United States was invested in making an atomic bomb. Mm-hmm. I mean, just thank you for that one, FDR. The, quote, tolerance dose for workers was 0.1 micrograms of ingested radium. That's about what the paint contained. The difference is that during the Manhattan Project, scientists weren't licking radioactive materials off of paintbrushes, unlike the dial painting girls. Every time they licked and dipped, the radium built up in their body. Gums are very porous, as are teeth. Think about, like, when you drink too much coffee or tea and your teeth discolor.
Yeah.
It soaks it up, man.
Yeah.
So every time they would lick that paint, little bits would go into their teeth or seep into their gums.
And they also swallowed it, too, so.
Right. It would just go, I mean, straight down their throats and then directly into their bloodstream and then into their bone marrow and basically wherever it wanted to go. So it was only natural that when the original radium girls started getting toothaches or complaining of jaw pain, it was related to the radium. Mm-hmm. But no one in the factories tied it together. Radium was good for you. Why would this ever be related? But they would soon find out that it was not only related, but it was going to get much, much worse. Grace Fryer was one of the first to develop symptoms. She had started at United States Radium Corporation on April 10th, 1917, as an 18-year-old woman looking to earn top wages, pull her weight around her household, and of course, buy some just fun accessories in the latest fashions.
You have to. I mean, especially if you have money as a young woman.
Got to. Glow in the dark, girl.
Hell yeah.
She went to a dentist to see if there was anything that could be done about her tooth pain. The doctor ended up pulling a tooth, but the pain persisted. In fact, the hole where the tooth had been had never healed, and in its place, a deep abscess formed. I'm going to warn everyone right now.
Yeah.
It is going to get very disgusting in the next few minutes.
Very brutal. So if you don't like it, I guess skip. If you like it, continue to listen.
And if you're unsure, let us know later.
Just listen anyways. I mean, it's fine. You'll be fine. Maybe.
Molly Maggia was one of Grace's friends. They had worked in the factory together until 1922, when Molly had to quit. She was feeling under the weather all the time, so tired and her jaw ached. She, too, went to a dentist, but a different dentist than her friend Grace, unfortunately. And he, too, pulled a tooth. Just like Grace, an abscess formed in the hole where the tooth had once been. More and more of her teeth had to be pulled, and soon she had almost no teeth left in her mouth. Her abscesses would burst open, filling her mouth with blood and pus. The pain was unbearable. But since she went to a different dentist, there was no tying these cases together.
Yeah, but the dentist still should have been like, something is not right. You shouldn't be losing teeth, and they should be healing. Like, shitty dentist. But then again, it was
1922. Yeah. He's probably like, have you been taking your radium? Because if you...
Do you want this morphine? I think it'll help.
Just try this morphine. You're gonna like it. Then the aches in her back began, and then her joints, and then her limbs. Her doctors couldn't find anything wrong with her. They suspected rheumatism, and they prescribed morphine. No, I'm just kidding. They prescribed aspirin.
Oh, even better.
Yeah.
That'll help.
Her pain became so intense that she was soon unable to walk, and she spent most of her time laying in bed in agony. She returned to her dentist over and over to have tooth after tooth pulled. While examining the very few teeth that she had left, her dentist pressed down slightly on one of her loose teeth, and Molly's jaw caved under the extremely light pressure. He wiggled the tooth free, and to the horror of them both, a large piece of her jawbone came out of her mouth along with her tooth. It was full of holes, and the bone was dark brown in color.
Yeah, they do a version of this in the movie, mm-hmm. and it is absolutely disgusting. I mean, y'all know I can handle gore, but this part made me cringe so hard. And I did that thing where, like, I just put my hands up to my jaw, and I was just like, ugh. Like, it's not great.
No. And it's just insane.
To think that somebody actually had to go through that. Yeah.
Yeah. A few days later, Molly's entire lower jawbone was removed, not by surgery, but simply by wiggling it free from the tissue and pulling it gently from her face. Her doctors presumed that she had syphilis and the infection had spread to her jaw, which is a thing that happens in syphilis. Like, the later stages, your bones become riddled with it and they rot.
Mm-hmm.
But they never tested Molly for syphilis.
Mm-hmm.
They never treated her for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they never even told her that they thought she might have it. By all accounts, Molly was a virgin. And there was absolutely no way that she had been able to contract syphilis. The infection in Molly Maggia's jaw spread to the tissue in her throat, slowly eating its way through her jugular vein. At 5 p.m. on September 12th, 1922, Molly's vein burst and her mouth was flooded with her own blood. She hemorrhaged so fast that there was no stopping the bleeding. She died at age 24 by simultaneously suffocating on her own blood and bleeding to death.
I'd have to say, out of all of the deaths that we have talked about on this podcast, I think that this one may be the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine suffocating on your own blood slash bleeding, just bleeding out from your mouth. That's how you die.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely horrible.
And at the same time, you have no lower jawbone.
Yeah.
Like, touch your own face right now, no. Listeners.
No.
And imagine how much of your face would be gone.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's chilling.
Yeah.
And this really happened to a real woman.
Mm-hmm.
Molly's death would be the first in a series of radium girl deaths. A term that would later become known as radium necrosis was the culprit. The word necrosis means to die. The radium was poisoning the bones in these girls, making them die, making them brittle, making them brown and full of holes. It was called honeycombing, which sounds very cute, but it's not cute. Soon, girl after girl began complaining of jaw pain, knee pain, back pain, or, you know, whatever, one after another. Mm-hmm. Everything was hurting. Everything was rotting. When Marie Curie heard about what was happening to the radium girls, she was so surprised to hear how the girls were handling the radium, not only without any safety precautions, but also directly putting it into their mouths.
And swallowing it. Like, they were eating it.
Yeah. She said, quote, "I see no hope for them. My experiments with radium convince me that if the poison is taken internally, it is practically impossible to destroy it." Curie died in 1933 from complications of long-term radium exposure.
Wow.
The effects of radium poisoning are nausea, vomiting, fever, weakness, hair loss, fatigue, unhealing wounds, and infections, which, at the beginning stages, is pretty easy to just brush off as something else.
Yeah.
But then the extreme anemia sets in. Internal bleeding, all sorts of cancers, such as lung and specifically bone cancer, mm-hmm. cataracts, ulcers on the skin, burns on the skin, brittle bones, decaying bones. Remember Grace Fryer that we talked about earlier? Mm-hmm. Eventually, her spine crumbled under the weight of her own body, and she was forced to wear a metal back brace for the rest of her life. Sometimes bones even shrunk. In the book, they talk about several women, like at least six different women, mm-hmm. who ended up with one leg 4 to 6 inches shorter than the other because of their exposure to radium. It causes muscle weakness, stiffness. Some women couldn't even raise their arms above their own head. And just, it's so much more.
Yeah, and just, I guess, FYI for anyone out there, there are pictures on Google of some of these women. Uh-huh. And they're gnarly as hell.
Dude, it's tough to look at.
You're still alive, but your body is just crumbling underneath you, and weird abscesses just form for no reason. I mean, there's one picture that's specifically coming to mind where this woman's whole jaw is just like ballooned up, and it's bad. It's very bad.
It's super bad. So if you like to torture yourself, definitely Google radium poisoning.
Yeah.
Right now. Do it right now. But tie your hair up just in case you need to vomit first.
Yeah.
The Dial girls also stopped having their periods, or sometimes they became sterile. I mean, it probably wouldn't happen like if you dip your testicles in it for only 3 hours.
Just 3 hours.
Yeah. That's like the cutoff, you know? It's like you don't want to push it.
Yeah.
But if you're eating paint every day, yeah, probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
One girl was pregnant while she was working at the factory, and she gave birth to a stillborn baby, only to find out that she could never conceive again. The U.S. Radium Corporation hired a doctor. Super great, right? Mm. Frederick Flynn. He was to examine the girls, but he found no ties to the radium that they were working with.
Oh, did he?
He suggested that the X-ray machines used by some doctors had been the cause for the sickness, exposing them to dangerous radiation.
Okay.
Yeah, unlike the healthy radiation that they were drinking through straws at work, basically.
But the only these girls were the ones that were affected by those doctors, nobody else in the community?
No,
okay.
It wasn't
Got them. It, Frederick.
So we find out later in the story that Frederick Flynn, technically a doctor, mm-hmm. was not a medical doctor.
Yeah, they have that bit in the movie too.
Yeah.
He testifies and they're like, "Were you a doctor?" And he's like, "No.
Technically I have a doctorate."
Yeah.
But it's in something, it's
in like psychology or something.
Yeah, it's like not even close to being a medical doctor.
No.
So he's just having access to all these girls and like looking at their bodies and like doing weird shit and then being like, no.
It's like being a podiatrist and saying that somebody, like looking at someone's lungs and being like, "That's not lung cancer. I know because I'm a doctor." It's not the same thing.
No, not even close. By 1924, 50 women who had worked at the U.S. Radium Corporation were sick, and a dozen others had died. The companies denied the correlation between the workplace and the girls getting sick and dying. They blamed syphilis and the loose attitudes of the women at the time, just like they had done to Molly Maggia, as a way to smear the reputations of the Dial girls.
I mean, God forbid a woman during this time make her own money and have her own freedom. She must have syphilis, right?
Definitely. It was just running rampant through Orange, New Jersey. In 1925, one of the floor managers, this time a man, had died from these mysterious symptoms. A doctor by the name of Harrison Martland decided to do a little bit of digging into this. Dr. Martland looked at the man's bones, and then he decided he was going to do some testing that had never ever been done before. He burned the bones into ash, and then he tested them to see if they had been radioactive. And sure as shit, they were. I remember in the book they said that when he cut the bone open, his bone marrow was bright red and glowing. Ugh. Bone marrow is supposed to be like off-white.
Yeah,
not great. Mm-mm. He thought that the girls were suffering the same fate that this man had.
I'd also like to point out that it wasn't until the first man died from possible poisoning from radium that scientists were like, maybe we should start to research this.
Well, the important people were dying, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly right.
He had devised a test to test the radiation inside the girls' bodies while not having to burn their bones up. The girls would breathe as hard as they could, and he would collect the particles coming from their breath. This is what he tested for radiation, and all of the girls that he tested were radioactive. The Dial girls became the ghostly visions that they had once so eagerly wanted to be. Sometimes they would catch glimpses of themselves in the mirrors of their house at night, seeing a glowing ghostly apparition staring back, and that's how they knew that they had radiation poisoning. Mm. The U.S. Radium Company issued a warning to their lab workers. All workers must wear protective clothing and handle the radium with ivory forceps going forwards. No exceptions. The lab workers were given ample time off as well to limit their exposure to radium. But still, the Dial painting girls were not warned. And they were told that the amount of radium that they were handling was completely safe. The company did briefly provide little bowls of water to dip the brushes in, but this was deemed too wasteful and the bowls were taken away because too much of the radium paint would go in the water.
Instead of in their bodies?
Yeah. Okay. And then they'd have to drink the water, and it was just like this whole other thing. And then the girls were given these thin glass pens like the Dial painting companies in Switzerland used. But these were clumsy, and the girls preferred the precision of the camel hair brushes. So they went back to the brushes, to the dip, lick, and paint situation. In 1928, the inventor of radium dial paint, Dr. Sabin A. von Schlotzky, died. He had gotten sick from holding vials of radium with his bare hands instead of forceps. The Dial companies still denied the connection to the girls painting dials and the deaths of so many of their employees. For some time, doctors, dentists, and researchers went without releasing their findings at request of the company as to not soil their good name. The dying girls, though, were of no concern to the companies.
The United States Radium Corporation denied any responsibility for the girls' deaths. It was syphilis. That's what it was.
Pretty obvious.
But rumors started to spread, and they feared that this little tidbit of information could really harm their industry. So in 1924, they commissioned a specialist to look further into the matter. This was second to the report that they had already ignored. But what was different was that this study was independent. The expert they had hired found that there was a direct link between radium and the women's illnesses, which pissed the president of the USRC off. And instead of accepting these findings, he just hired new experts to publish findings that stated the opposite, which is what Noelle talked about earlier.
That is exactly how experts work. Mm-hmm. You pay them money and they tell you what you want to hear.
In addition to that, the president of the USRC also lied to the Department of Labor about the original report. He pushed it off and claimed that the women were just trying to palm off their sickness so that the company would pay for their medical bills.
I'm sorry. So all of these girls just for some reason are having very similar circumstances. Mm-hmm. Like one of their legs are shrinking for some fucking reason. Their jaws are falling out of their face.
Yeah.
They're hemorrhaging and choking on their own blood.
Right.
But they're just trying to blame this corporation that they all happen to work for.
Yeah. They just want money.
Oh, it makes total sense.
In order to build a case, the girls needed proof that the radium was to blame for their illnesses. With the 1925 test done by Harrison Martland, as Noelle mentioned, the girls finally had some ground to stand on. With the new published information, the girls decided to band together and stand against the USRC in a fight for justice and to protect future girls who may take up the job as dial painters, because dial painters were still being hired all throughout the U.S. at this time, despite this information becoming available.
There were actually dial painting companies all over the world, but the United States was the only country that used the lip pointing technique. Mm. They were all the other countries were using safe techniques.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right for America.
Doesn't it?
A brave young woman named Grace Fryer, who was also the daughter of a union delegate, led the charge, and she said, "It's not for myself I care. I'm thinking more of the hundreds of girls to whom this may serve as an example." Grace went from lawyer to lawyer, trying to find someone who would stand next to her and the other women and fight, but several of them turned her away. They either just didn't believe the girls, or they were just too afraid to stand against the USRC, who at the time was a very large and powerful corporation. It was going to be a long, difficult fight, and finding a man strong enough to fight with them proved to be extremely hard. In the movie, the USRC also sends men out to intimidate the girls. I'm not really sure if this happened, but I'm going to say most likely it did.
It did.
It did it? Read about it?
They go about it in the book, or they talk about it in the book. They somehow got the information where all these girls lived.
Yeah.
And, like, all this personal information about them. And they would show up to their house at all hours.
Try to intimidate them.
Just totally intimidate them.
Mm-hmm. It's also said that they probably threatened lawyers against taking their case, which is why no lawyer wanted to fight against them.
Yeah. And think about how you would feel if you're an 18-year-old girl. You're not feeling great. All of your friends are fucking dying.
Mm-hmm.
And a man shows up to your house in a trench coat at 3 a.m. and he's talking about some legal mumbo jumbo. You have no idea what any of it means. You're going to freak the fuck out.
That and also what he throws a brick through your window. And threatens your family.
Mm-hmm.
The women were up against a lot. And at the time, radium poisoning wasn't a thing. So one, they had to prove that. And then they had to convince a jury that they deserved compensation for this radium poisoning. There was also a statute of limitations at the time. It stated that victims accusing their employee of poisoning in the workplace must bring their case within 2 years of being poisoned.
Look, this might be a hot take, but if your employer is poisoning you, I don't think that there should be a statute of limitation on this.
No, absolutely not.
Like, you should be able to go back 10 years later and be like, remember when you poisoned me, 50 Paul?
50 years later.
You poisoned me.
Yeah.
I want to talk about it now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Radium poisoning, however, did not start to show in the victim until about 5 years, so it was sort of this, like, huge conundrum. This didn't stop the girls, though, because at this point, they knew that they would be dead within years, and they would not back down.
Hell yeah, dude.
This case was covered widely by the news, and the girls found themselves in the center of the action. Their case made front page news all over the U.S., in 1927, 2 years after the girls first brought the subject to light, a new, young lawyer named Raymond Berry was courageous enough to take the case, representing Grace and four other women who worked for the U.S. Radium Corporation. On May 18th, 1927, Grace Fryer, Edna Hussman, Catherine Schaub, and sisters Quinta McDonald and Albina Larice filed a lawsuit against USRC, each asking for a $250,000 settlement, which is close to $3.8 million in today's money.
Which still doesn't seem like enough.
No. This was fantastic news, but there was only one problem. Time was running out for the girls. The radium was ravaging their bodies, and it was estimated they would only have 4 more months to live. In fact, at their very first court appearance, 2 out of the 5 women were bedridden, and none of the women were even able to lift their arms to take an oath because the radium had basically just disintegrated their bones. The USRC was fully aware of this little tidbit, and they used it to their advantage by trying to prolong the trial with the hopes that by the time it finally came due, all of the girls would be dead and there would be no one to fight against them.
Yeah, it was just like this old-timey lawyer in a courtroom, and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, let me just put my hat on, my devil horns are showing.
Because of this, the 5 girls were forced to take an out-of-court settlement because when it came down to it, they were just out of time. Each girl received $10,000, which is a little over $150,000 in today's money. And they each got an additional $600, which is about $9,000 today, each year that they survived past 1927. Additionally, they received $12 a week, which was around $200, for each week that they continued to be alive.
That seems really morbid.
Isn't it very dark?
You're paid for every week you remain alive.
The longer you survive, the longer you get paid, basically.
It's really fucked.
I think that the USRC was banking on the fact that they knew that these women were going to die very soon.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
It was also determined that the USRC would pay for all medical and legal expenses that the girls endured. The girls' fight was not for nothing, and while they did end up receiving some compensation, their lawyer Raymond Berry was not very happy with the outcome, and he felt as though the girls deserved more money, which they did.
Fully.
It was also later learned that the federal judge for the trial and the same judge who arranged the settlement was a stockholder in U.S. Radium.
Wow.
How fucked up is that?
The most fucked up. But also probably still goes on today.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
All 5 women died within a few months after the settlement was decided on. Though Grace and the others never went to trial or received what was rightfully theirs in compensation, their valiant fight and determination to stand against U.S. Radium paved the way for other fierce women to take up the same fight for justice.
In Ottawa, Illinois, the Radium Dial Company trudged on, giving no mind to the case that the U.S. Radium Corporation was facing. But the girls employed there were suffering the same fate as the girls were in Orange. One of the girls, Margaret Peg Looney, which just gonna put a pin in this for one moment. How is Peg a nickname for Margaret?
I don't know, but that's my grandmother's name, and her nickname is Peggy.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, but she's Margaret, and everyone calls her Peggy.
It's wild, dude.
Yeah, I know. It's like Dick and Richard. Same thing.
I don't really get it.
Me neither.
So Peg Looney had been working at the Radium Dial since age of 17. She was 1 of 10, the oldest sister in the family, so there was pressure on her to help support the household and earn a livable wage. She was known to bring home little vials of radium paint to use as makeup and decor in her room. Although Peg was one of the first to die of the Ottawa girls, she never left Radium Dial due to her illness. She worked there just until a week before her death.
Damn.
On the 14th of August, 1929, Peg was 24 years old when she died. She had had a tooth removed a week before. It was causing her a lot of pain. But just like the girls in Orange, her gum wasn't healing. She became extremely anemic extremely fast. She couldn't walk from hip pain, and her teeth and bits of jawbone were falling out of her mouth.
Sounds familiar.
One day while working, she collapsed at her desk, and she was sent to the company hospital. Her family was barred from visiting her. The company claimed that she had a highly contagious disease, diphtheria, and she had to be quarantined. Peg died alone 1 week after her collapse. The company wanted to bury her right away, even offering to pay for the burial expenses.
Of course they did.
One of her siblings refused to allow the company to bury her and insisted that she have a Catholic funeral. Radium Dial agreed to autopsy her body and to have the Looney's doctor present for it. But when their doctor arrived, the autopsy by the company doctor was already finished. The family was incredibly suspicious, and they wanted to take the company to court, but no lawyer would take their case.
So they're just straight up covering up. They know it's wrong, and they're just...
Yeah, there's a company hospital where they take sick employees.
Yeah, and they just want to bury her right away.
Yeah, absolutely. In 1925, Catherine Donahue, one of Peg's workmates and dear friends, started to feel ill as well, and she developed a limp. She was fired from her job at Radium Dial because the company said that her limp was a liability.
Wow.
She began to lose weight rapidly. She became very frail, and like the others, her teeth were falling out. Her jaw, too, began to chip away, and she would find fragments of her own jaw in her mouth, having escaped out of the pus-filled holes in which her teeth once were.
Yeesh.
A local doctor could find absolutely nothing wrong with Catherine, but denied that she had radium poisoning. So she traveled to Chicago for another opinion, and the doctor she saw there confirmed that it was, in fact, radium necrosis and radium poisoning that she was suffering from. A hole was eaten straight through her jaw, and she used a floral handkerchief that she held to her face to not only conceal the horrific injury, but also to collect the pus that would have otherwise dripped from the hole in her face onto the floor.
When I was reading this part specifically, and it just mentioned how she always had to keep, she like constantly had a handkerchief in her hand because her mouth was just constantly pussing.
Yeah. A hole.
The grossest thing I've ever read.
A hole from the inside of her jaw to the outside. Mm. Catherine was far from the only girl affected by the luminous paint. Numerous other employees began to ask for money from the company for their medical expenses. The company did pay a few girls off, but it was barely enough to cover their mounting medical expenses. Along with four other Dial painters, all suffering from radium-related maladies, she decided she was going to sue Radium Dial.
Hell yeah.
The girls called themselves the Society of the Living Dead.
Ooh, that's dark, that's but I like it.
Fucking metal, dude.
I like it.
And they refused to back down. In 1937, the five women found an attorney named Leonard Grossman that would represent them in court. He agreed to handle their case for free since the women had so little money to their names. Radium Dial's president was fired in 1934, and he opened another radium clock company just down the road from Radium Dial called Luminous Processes. He hired a lot of the girls that had worked at the Radium Dial company when the company closed its Ottawa branch. By this time, Radium Dial had moved to New York and opened a plant there. The Illinois Industrial Commission was contacted by the girls' lawyer, and it was found that they only had retained a $10,000 deposit left by the Radium Dial company when it disclosed to the commission that the company could not find any insurance to cover the cost of compensation for their employees. During the trial, Catherine, who weighed only 60 pounds at this time,
oh my God,
learned for the first time from a doctor serving as a witness that her condition was fatal, and she collapsed in the courtroom from shock. The trial was continued at her home because she was too weak to travel. In 1938, the Illinois Industrial Commission ruled in favor of the Dial painters. Radium Dial's attorney tried to appeal the ruling, hoping that they would get the verdict overturned. But for the second time, the commission judge found for the Dial painters. Radium Dial appealed six additional times, taking the case all the way to the Supreme Court. In October 23rd of 1939, the court decided to not hear the appeal and the lower ruling was upheld. Radium Dial was finally forced to pay for what it had done to the girls. The company only had to pay the $10,000 held by the commission. The Dial painters shared that total collectively, what? Splitting it between them.
Only $10,000?
Mm-hmm. The state of Illinois was unable to cross state lines because they conveniently moved to New York when the girls started getting sick.
No.
Yeah, so they couldn't enforce any lawsuits or demand payouts from the company because it was across state lines. Still, this was something. The Radium Girls had won and the company admitted fault.
The Radium Girls and their case was historic. It was one of the first cases which an employer was legally held accountable for the health of its employees. These cases led to the investigation of several other Radium Dial plants in the U.S., led by the Consumers League. President of the Consumers League, Florence Kelly, Alice Hamilton, and the lawyer Raymond Berry all met with doctors around New York and New Jersey to sign a proposal for a conference with Surgeon General Hugh Cummings.
Huge Cummings?
Huge Cummings. Hugh Cummings.
Oh, okay.
On December 28th, 1928, they set up two committees to investigate existing conditions and also to suggest ways to protect workers in the future. The case of the Radium Girls made national news, and radium was no longer considered the miracle elixir it was once touted as.
But what am I going to do with these two truckloads of radium-infused sand?
You gotta throw that sunshine away.
God damn it. I'll just put it on like a playground or something.
In 1933, the federal government's Public Health Service took a closer look at painting procedures for luminous dials and insisted on safer conditions. In 1938, the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act outlawed packaging that marketed products with radium in a deceitful manner. So people could no longer sell radium products and claim that it would add years to your life.
But they could definitely sell radium products and be like, poison your enemies slowly until all of their teeth fall out. That was totally cool because it was on the up and up and it was honest.
Yeah, totally chill.
Yeah.
Safety precautions were put into place for existing dial painters. They now were given protective gear and the girls were no longer instructed to lip dip. The Radium Girls cases also impacted labor laws in the U.S. and led to the creation of radiation safety standards. Grace, Catherine, and all the others had accomplished what they wanted. Radium was finally deemed the dangerous element it always was. However, radium paint was to be used on dials up until the late 1970s.
A shocking amount of things have radium in them.
Mm-hmm. The girls in their case is not only important for outing the dangers of radium, their cases also brought about major changes in safety laws in the workplace. The Radium Girls case set a precedent for individual employees to sue for damages against their employers. It opened up the right for the little man to stand against corporations regarding mistreatment in the workplace. With the Radium Girls case and the help of Frances Perkins, who was the Labor Secretary of the U.S. and first woman to ever hold a presidential position.
Fuck yeah, Frances.
She established the Occupational Safety and Health Act, or OSHA, as it's called now. And she created it.
Very cool.
OSHA's mission is to assure safe and healthy working conditions for working men and women by setting and enforcing standards and by providing training, outreach, education, and assistance. Before the establishment of OSHA, it was estimated that 14,000 people died while on the job every year. After OSHA was created, that number dramatically dropped to around 4,500, which is still a shit ton of people.
That is still so many people, but it's 10,000 less than it was before, which is a freaking crazy number. Yeah.
The girls' contribution to safe working environments for years to come was not the only legacy they left. Their case made a huge scientific impact as well. Rob Lee D. Evans used research collected from 27 dial painters to determine the tolerance level for radium in the human body.
I'm going to say none. None is probably the best level.
Yeah, let's just take I had zero radium. That's what I would like.
Yeah, no radium, please.
The Center for Human Radiobiology was also able to discover valuable research by collecting tissue samples from radium dial painters, which eventually helped in understanding exactly what effects radium can have on humans. Unfortunately, it had to happen first before they actually found that out.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a silver lining.
Yeah.
You know, all these girls lost their lives. It was so many of them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of good did come out of it.
A life-sized bronze statue was put up on the corner of Clinton and Jefferson Street in Ottawa, Illinois, and it shows a woman dressed in 1920s attire, standing on a clock face, holding a paintbrush in one hand and a tulip in the other, and this is kind of, I guess, a monument to the girls mm-hmm. and the lives that were lost. However, the tulip on the statue does not look like a tulip. It's, let's just say, think of another thing that might look like a tulip.
A penis.
Yeah.
A penis that has been putting small wax and radium rods right up its urethra for several years, and it's just like, it's ready to go.
I like almost wanted to take that part out because I was like, oh, but it's a statue and it's for these girls and it's for such a like a positive thing, but it really does look like a penis.
Why did they put a dick in her hand?
I don't know why they put a tulip in the first place. There must be some significance, but it does not look like a tulip at all.
I so. Don't think so.
Though this statue is there in the girls' honor, it will never be enough for all of the pain that the girls endured.
Yeah, especially because they put a dick in her hand.
Especially because they put a tulip dick in her hand. For the most part, the Radium Girls are all but forgotten, though today we all benefit from their suffering that they experienced during their short-lived lives and the fight that they refused to give up. As Noel mentioned earlier, radium has a half-life of about 1,600 years, so if you place a Geiger counter over the grave of a radium girl, it will continue to click for over 1,000 years, and the bodies of the girls themselves will continue to glow in their graves for many years to come.
Wow. Our listener, Chaz, who suggested this, they have one of these clocks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they bought a Geiger counter, and they sent us a video.
Yeah,
it's so cool. And it is so scary how much radiation is still coming off of this thing.
Apparently, the watches and stuff that they painted, they, like, you can buy them. They're very common still.
There's so
in
much.
In circulation still.
There's so much stuff out there that has radioactive stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a line. Do you know what Fiestaware is?
No.
It's, like, a line of dishes that came in, like, brightly colored. They were just, like, pretty, like, brightly colored dishes.
Yeah.
Well, the red one was just super radioactive because the paint that they used was, I don't remember what, it wasn't radium.
Whatever color that they needed super radioactive.
Yeah, and you were eating off of it and drinking out of it and just living your life.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy.
Wow.
So that's the story of the Radium Girls.
Yeah.
We're so glad to learn about them. Mm-hmm. Their sacrifice is just, it's unreal, dude. Yeah. Their story is unreal.
And thanks to Chaz for, I guess, lighting a fire under our asses to actually do this. Because it's been a topic that I've been wanting to do. And once he sent us, he was talking about it and he sent us that video, I was like, yeah, it's the time. We got to do it.
Yes, for sure. And if you guys have anything actually that you want to suggest to us, we love hearing it.
Yeah.
So definitely DM us on all the social medias or email us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com.
Open to suggestions.
Please suggest stuff.
Do we have a listener mail for this episode?
We sure do.
We do. Okay. Yes.
This week's listener mail comes from our sweet friend and fellow podcaster, Nicole.
Oh, great name.
It's all right, okay? It's no Noel, but it's fine.
It's beautiful, and you know it.
She runs a very, very dope podcast called Ramblings with a Medical Historian.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you are into the whole creepy medical history thing, which if you've made it this far in this episode, I'm sure you are, check that one out. It's very fun.
Probably a lot of morphine happening.
Oh, just there's no minimum on the morphine here. She begins, "Hi, Nicole and Noel."
Hi, also Nicole.
Hi, other Nicole. "I promised these stories a while back and have only now had the time to put them down on paper. I am sorry that they're late, but I hope that this is in time for your next listener episode."
Mm.
Well, we're reading it at the end of an episode.
At the end of an episode.
So you made the early cut.
Yeah.
She calls it Spooky Tales from Up North.
Ooh, excited.
"Let me tell you about some of the ghosts here in Sault Ste. Marie. The history of this town goes back thousands and thousands of years and was home to the Ojibwe. There are not many stories about indigenous ghosts, save for this one." Mm. "There are stories of a chief with a full headdress who appears in the cemetery north of the Sioux. Another common ghost story is the courthouse ghost. It is said that in winter, when the snow covers the roof of the courthouse, footprints appear that lead from the roof access door to the edge of the roof. People only ever report seeing one set of footprints that leads towards the edge of the roof. They say that it is the ghost of someone who died by jumping off the edge of the roof. However, no one ever remembers anyone who died by jumping or falling off the roof of the courthouse." Now I say, Nicole, you Nicole.
Me Nicole?
Not this Nicole. Well, I guess both
Nicole's. Other Nicole.
To all the Nicoles.
Mm-hmm.
If you see one set of footprints in the snow, it is not because a ghost is going to jump off of a building. It is because God is carrying you.
Jesus, take the wheel.
She continues, "Now, I have never seen a ghost myself, which may be more of a good thing after listening to all of the listener ghost stories on all the podcasts that I listen to. Some of them are scarier than anything in the movies." I definitely agree with that one. "I have, however, worked at several places that are haunted, or at least reportedly so. One is a museum, which I am not at liberty to divulge the name of, so as to not affect the reputation of the site.
Oh.
I have heard several stories from my coworkers and volunteers. My coworkers would say that when they were in the basement getting changed, their bra straps or shirts would get tugged or pulled.
Whoa.
There were also reports of a little boy with a ball appearing on the stairs. Lastly, one of the volunteers said that they saw a black mass on the second floor of the building. Another site that I worked at was my local university, which is also a former residential school. One of the most troubling places to find ghosts because of the residential schools were places of genocide that for over 100 years took indigenous children away from their parents and communities, stripped them of their identities and their culture. These children were abused and many died before ever returning home. The residential school is now closed, and several indigenous groups are in there along with the university. They consistently smudge the building, which should help to move the ghosts along. However, there are reports of spirits on the top floor or the fifth floor. Before they redid the fifth floor, it did look rather eerie. The ceilings were slanted and low, and the hall and classrooms were small and stuffy. The classrooms are still stuffy now, despite the renovation. People have reported that they have seen or felt ghosts up there. Some of these people have even told me that they've used a Ouija board and have contacted something.
Creepy.
They even say that one of the things they contacted may have been a child.
Ooh, be careful with that. Sometimes they trick you.
What? Tell me more right now.
Ghosts. Demons. Oh. Evil spirits.
Making you think that they're babies?
Yeah. Well, you're more likely to talk to them and open up to them.
Oh, that makes sense.
They're innocent, so, you know.
Yeah, like if you're like, what's your name? And it's all Beelzebub. You're probably not going to want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
But if it's like Bobby.
Jerry.
Yeah.
Well, hey, my name is Jerry. Can you help me?
But it's actually a demon.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think I should add that there is also a graveyard behind the school. We have no idea how many children were buried there, or even where they are all buried, as most of the children's graves were marked with wooden crosses and would have decomposed over time. I really hope that all of the children have been able to move on.
Yeah.
These are all the stories that I can remember right now off the top of my head, but I'm working at the former jail right now. Ooh. So after quarantine, when I get back to working in the office, I may have more ghost stories.
Yes.
Salute, Nicole.
Aw, thanks for that, Nicole.
Yes.
And remember to check out her podcast called Rambling with a Medical Historian.
It's very, very fun. And thank you so much for writing in. If you have any ghost stories like Nicole, please send them to quiteunusualpod@gmail.com or slippery slide into our DMs because we want to hear them.
You guys know we're on all the social medias, so you can also slippery slide into those.
Yeah, and we're on Reddit now.
Yeah, I don't know how to use it, but we're on there.
Yeah, we got a subreddit. It's called Quite Unusual Pod. Everything is Quite Unusual Pod.
Yeah.
So just put that in the Google machine and then go to a place and we'll talk, I guess.
And I think we have one patron, new patron to welcome.
We do. Thank you to Connie L.
Thanks for joining our Patreon.
Yay.
Thanks for the support. If anyone has anything spooky, letter, a golden dick, you know the drill.
Yeah, like if you have like something dipped in radium that you just need out of your house because the ghost of radium past is haunting you, just send it to us.
You can send it to P.O. Box 1212 in Des Plaines, Illinois, 60017.
Yes, and if you like what you hear, we ask that you pass us on.
Yeah.
Tell a friend. Oh, that was so nice.
We harmonized.
Aw. Tell a friend. Tell your mom. Tell an enemy. I don't know. Just tell someone. And maybe we can sort of start like a little club where like there's like a bunch of us and like we all, I don't know, like brandish weapons and like we learn how to do like maybe like some cool samurai moves and then maybe like we all get matching outfits and we go and we take down our communal enemies and I don't know, maybe like we just start doing this thing where it's just like
or you could just tell someone that we're pretty cool and that'll just be that, you know.
You could do that too, that would be
that
fine
too.
Yeah,
that works.
That's,
for you
that's fine too.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm a little disappointed, but that's fine too.
Well, I guess remember to celebrate the strange.
And keep it unusual. Bye. And this is the part of the show where we give praise to the all-knowing leaders, supporters of the pod, and benevolent beings.
Dispenser W, who once found the portal to another dimension in the back of a Chili's, but they were actually just looking for the restroom, so they closed the door and moved right along.
I want my baby back. To Tim M, who had a coffee date with Mothman, but isn't really into bodybuilders, so they broke it off.
Savannah L, who is actually D.B. Cooper, but never told anyone because they don't like too much attention.
A little shy guy. Samantha P., a vampire hunter, who figured out that vampires can be killed if they eat a single Cool Ranch Dorito.
Delicious.
Much more cost-effective than wooden steaks, and also great for after-hunting snacks.
Mike B., an arcane archaeologist who discovered the ancient temple of Baphomet and now uses it as his man cave.
Are you sure it wasn't the ancient temple of Bobby? To Lauren R., who once worked as a mechanic on a gray alien spaceship but had to quit because she was just too tall for the company uniforms.
Kaylee O., an ex-member of a snake-handling cult whose final day came when the snake she was handling bit her, giving her superpowers, and she now goes by Sneaky Snake Girl.
I'm a sneaky snake. To Joss H., a paranormal investigator who can not only commune with ghosts but holds a monthly poker tournament in the spirit world. every full moon when the veil is thinnest.
Evan Kay, a powerful witch who enjoyed playing with dark magic so much that he trapped a demon inside a doll for fun. I was wondering where my Raggedy Ann doll went.
And to Adam R., so charismatic that he convinced L. Ron Hubbard to join his cult, only to deny him access at the door. Sorry, L. Ron, you're not on the list, baby.
Thank you to all of our coven members on Patreon. Without you, we are nothing.
We're not worthy.